Okay, so it's now 12:30, 7:30 in Israel, and hi everyone. I
Hi.
am Ayala Emet, a board member of Partners for Progressive Israel. Welcome to the Israel election, the impact on women, the latest program from Partners Women's Initiative, which focuses on voices of women from Palestine, Israel, and the global Jewish diaspora. Our aim is to open doors to new perspectives and innovative solutions, to deconstruct outdated narratives, and locate hope in unresolved situations. The Women's Initiative shines the light on the rich experiences of women in all walks of life. Before I introduce the panelists, let me note that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit organization dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, believing in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel inhabitants. Partners seeks to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's complexities so that they can better advocate for a progressive Israeli future. We are glad to bring this webinar to all of you for free. If you like it and you want more programs like this, please visit our website at progressiveisrael.org and make a contribution. Thank you. I want to thank our co-sponsor, the National Council of Jewish Women. Now, let me introduce our panelists. Galia Golan is Professor Emerita of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, where she chaired the Political Science Department. She is the author of 10 books, a member of the Labor Party from 1977 to 1992, a member of the National Executive of Meretz from 1992 to 2020, and she is also a member of the editorial board of the Palestine-Israel Journal. She was a founder and leader of Peace Now until 2014, when she joined the leadership of Combatants for Peace. Dr. Golan was a founder leader of the Jerusalem Link, a joint Israeli-Palestinian venture for peace. And
Women's Venture for Peace.
Thank you.
Very important. Sorry, very important.
And the leader of the International Women's Commission for a Just Israeli-Palestinian Peace. She was the founder of Israel's first Women's Studies Program and Research Center at the Hebrew University. Samar Saleme is the founder of Na'am, Arab Women in the Center. She's a social worker and lives and works with her family in the Jewish Arab community of Neve Shalom, Wahat al Salam, and is a regular contributor to Local Call, 972 Magazine, and Haaretz, among others. She is the first Israeli-Palestinian woman to be elected to the board of governors of the Hebrew University. Excuse me. She raises her powerful and articulate voice against violence against our women in Israel and for gender equality. Our moderator is Suha Salman Musa, the executive director of Mosawa Center, the advocacy center for Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel, which promotes Palestinian Arab rights in a democratic society. She manages and develops Musawa's parliamentary, legal, international, and media advocacy for advancing the rights of Palestinian Israelis. She also focuses on strengthening community work. In recent years, Suha led the initiative to establish Friends of Musawa in the United States, promoting the center's work abroad. She holds an MBA from Haifa University and has fulfilled multiple leadership and management roles in a variety of organizations. Please note that there will be a Q&A in about 30 minutes. As you have questions, write them in the Q&A section at the bottom of your Zoom. Thank you. And now, take it away, Suha.
Thank you, Ayala. Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening, and thank you for joining us for this very important webinar, the election, the impact on women's. So I'll be moderating today's discussion on the aftermath of the Israeli election, the fourth one in 2 years, and its implications on the issues of justice and equality. We will also explore areas of commonality between progressive Jewish Israeli and Palestinian Israeli women and how we can advocate together. As Ayala mentioned, please, if you have any questions, please submit it on the Q&A section. Before we go in depth regarding progressive Jewish Israeli women and Palestinian Israeli women, I would like to start with a brief overview of the election's results. So this question is addressed to both of you, Galia and Samah. You know, the election, we are after the election, we had the results. I know that Netanyahu will have a press conference in about 30 minutes regarding the forming the coalition or the government. So what should we expect now that the elections is over? Will Netanyahu be able to form another government coalition? And if so, do you think with whom? With Lapid, with Gantz again? Maybe the role of Mansour Abbas? So please, let me know your thoughts.
I wasn't prepared really to answer that question. I do want to first of all thank Partners for Progressive Israel. I'm very grateful for the work of Partners for Progressive Israel, especially since us in Progressive Israel were not so numerous. I just wish we were doing a better job. But we do need your help and we do appreciate it. It's very hard to know who's going to be able to set up a government. To be very frank, prior to the elections, I made a bet with one of my grandsons that Netanyahu would set up the next coalition. I'm really very pessimistic about the situation because, well, first of all, because of the extreme right-wing parties that have gotten in. And what you really have to understand how extreme they are. These are Kahana supporters. These are people who said that the Arabs should be transferred out of Israel. These are people who say that all homosexuals and lesbians should be outlawed. I mean, that this is really an extreme group of people. No exaggerations here. And Netanyahu has encouraged them because he wanted to have enough people to create a government. And he may well. I mean, I would be very surprised. The truth is, I've been doing the numbers all day, and I'm sure that most people have been doing the numbers. It is possible for Gidon, for Yesh Atid, Lapid, it is possible to set up a government, but it's not easy. And the irony of it, as you probably already know, is that there's this very small, very conservative Arab party that broke away from the joint Arab list and actually managed to get over the threshold. And that's the surprise of the election. But he holds the key to the coalition. Whichever side he decides to go with, or the either side decides to permit him to go with them, because you have to remember that a lot of these parties on the right have refused Arab support in the past. I mean, we could have had a non-Netanyahu government in the past if people had been willing, like Lapid, had been willing to have Arab support or Arab participation. So we have our.
I think that Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will allow Abbas to support the government of Netanyahu from the outside?
I doubt it. I really would be surprised. I mean, Netanyahu might, because he wants to stay out of jail and be reelected. But I really cannot see Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, these Kahana people. I really can't see them permitting it. So and you made a good point. It's the question not only of their joining the coalition, God forbid, as far as the right wing is concerned, but they also don't want the Arab support from outside. In other words, to give them over 60 seats support in the Knesset. So the truth is, nobody knows what's going to happen, and we could even go to a fifth election. The thing that's interesting is to see how much the party, the centrist party that could have or almost set up a government last time, the blue and white ticket, how far they've fallen and how poorly they've done. But it serves the right because they've joined with Netanyahu in the last government. There's a lot more to say, but it's all guesswork. We really do not know.
Okay. I think Samah disconnected. Okay. So Galia, I know that you mentioned when Samah comes back, I know that you mentioned this connection between Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, that it's very dangerous. And in terms of democracy and justice and equality. So what do you think needs to be done? It's already, we have the election results. What the scenarios from, you said this is something that you are as a Jewish and as an Israeli afraid. So I wanted to ask Samah this question as a Palestinian citizen of Israel, how she will, her thoughts on this and this issue, but I will give you the floor once Samah comes back.
Well, I think that, look, I'm a peace activist more first and foremost. And so I don't expect anything good to happen on that front from a Netanyahu, Smotrich, Ben-Gvir government. Even Lapid launched his political party years ago at a settlement at Ariel. And then when he was the second largest party, he said that he would not set up a government with the Zouavis, meaning he would not go with the Arab population. I mean, this is not somebody who's going to end the occupation. But I think you're right. I think the greatest danger is internal. It's domestic. It's the danger to Israeli democracy. And one of the specific reasons is that the right wing and the extreme right wing would like to change the legal system. They would like to weaken the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is really the only institution that's sort of been okay. I say sort of because they haven't been so great about the settlements. They tend to stay out of any issue over the settlements. But they have been very, very good on domestic issues and not permitting a lot of the anti-democratic legislation that the Likud has tried to put in and a lot of the actions by the extreme right wing. So I think the biggest danger at present, if there is a government with these extreme, extreme right-wing parties and Netanyahu, the biggest danger is that they will try to curb the Supreme Court. And they also will try to save Netanyahu from going to jail. That's probably one of his conditions for working with them. So we're not in a very good place. However,
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the good news is that the Labour Party and Meretz have done better than was expected, fortunately. They're not very large. I mean, together they have 13 seats. That's not very much. But they're very strong. they're very good people, if I say so myself, and they're very, very much aware of the dangers that we might be facing. I might add, by the way, we have you, and my daughter works for the Association of Civil Rights in Israel. We have a number of civil rights associations. Adela is another one. These are very important, very important, and they're not going to go away. That I put a lot of hope in these NGOs, these extra parliamentary organizations.
But you know that they are limited, our work as NGOs, especially among the Arab community, especially NGOs that dealing with, you know, rights for Palestinian citizens of Israel, with, you know, the lobbying and monitoring the legislation and the discriminatory laws. So,
I agree with you that it's very difficult. My daughter is the lobbyist in the Knesset for the Association of Civil Rights. And so I really appreciate the work. But the truth is you people do, with these organizations, you do manage to get things to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And there usually is, or hopefully is a positive answer. Without these organizations, we would be in much, much worse condition. I just wrote a chapter for a book on Israeli civil society. And believe me that these organizations, the human rights organizations, play an extraordinarily important role. And that's part of the danger, is that the extreme right wing wants to curb the Supreme Court, which will mean that these organizations really have no place to go. Mm-hmm. And you know, also know, I'm sure, that a lot of the right wing NGOs have worked with these parties to curb NGOs and the peace organizations. So the situation, as I said, mm-hmm. of progressive Israel is not great. On the other hand, there are some positive things in these elections. And I think the one thing that I do take a certain amount of...
Can we hold on the positive? Because sure. I would like to ask the math, please. Okay. I would like to hear about positive things, you know, regarding the election results. But Samah, you were disconnected, and we were talking about the dangers of the right wing, you know, connection between Netanyahu, Smotrich, and Ben-Gvir. And Galia mentioned that she's not. This is a very dangerous situation that we are facing now. And I would like to hear your input about this situation and this election result with regards to this very far right wing coalition that it might form, in terms of the how it will affect the Arab community. Galia mentioned that she will rely on the organization in the Arab community and the peace organization to do their work. But I would like to hear your thoughts on this.
I'm very concerned about the right-wing party inside the Arab society. We are now aware that we have Ra'am, and it's based mainly on the Islamic movement. And we know that the liberal voice of the joint list is less heard and in dangerous situation, actually. And it's the same process that happened inside the Jewish society. This is what happened. The results of this connection, weird, bizarre, romantic relationship between the right wing inside the Arab society and the right wing parties in the Israeli society. And I'm concerned about this negotiation or potential coalition that will be based on the four mandates of that Ra'am received. And everybody in Israel who have common sense knew that the Israeli society for the last 12 years with the multiple frequent election bring more right-wing voices to the Knesset, and the government is being extreme from term to term. Especially after like 4 years under Trump administration, they feel free to do what they want to do, and they have the backup from the international community, especially from the the US government. So what's happened meanwhile, we were dealing with the deal of the century and the transition of the Arab society here and the deal of the century and killing the peace process for good. The Arab society became very desperate. We are dealing with lots of inside issues that rise up or help Mansour Abbas and his party to actually destroy or to leave the join list, saying that we have another voice. We will try not to support the center-right, you know, left side of the Israeli political map. Let's try to play another game. And I'm very concerned of this, you know, potential coalition or partnership. We knew as a feminist that they have lots of common issues to fight for. We knew for many, many years that the Islamic Party coordinate every move in the parliament with Shas, with the ultra-Orthodox parties.
I would like to address, especially for our audience, about this specific topic that, and also Galia, you can step in, but Samah, I would like you to address this issue, because we've seen that the religious conservative parties are gaining more power, Raham, Shas, and etc. And while the number of women in the Knesset has decreased in this election, so, and taking all this into consideration, how do, and all the campaign that was regarding the LGBTQ, you know, in the Arab community, and the campaign that was held by Ram and the Joint List, and also Shas and others, how do you think these two things, the religious, the right wing, the campaign, how would it impact women's rights and gender equality going forward in Israel, particularly in the Arab community, because there was a backlash on Aida Tuma in certain issues, LGBT, and mm-hmm. Everybody heard that. So I would like you to address this in this topic regarding the Arab woman, and also Galia, after that, if you can also address regarding this in women in general. But Samah, I would like to hear your thoughts in this specific issue, decreasing the woman number of women in the Knesset, especially from the Arab parties. We know that the Joint List have only one, and Ra'am Iman Khatib was the fifth, so she didn't get into the Knesset. That's so please, right. Samah, can you hear me?
So the last term in the Knesset, we have the, you know, the maximum number of Arab women in the Knesset. We were very proud of four female feminist Knesset members from different parties. It was like the highlight of the last election. This election between Ra'am and the Joint List, we lost three wonderful feminist women who was supposed to be in the Knesset. So we didn't lose the power, only like general power. We used we lost feminist power. From the other side, we have in the Zionist liberal side of the Jewish lists in the Labour Party, Ibtissam Rani managed to squeeze in the last minute, and she was number seven with everything around her running to the Knesset, but she made it, and Ghaida Rinawi also made it. But the two of the Arab women, yes, from Meretz, but Dalia, I'm sorry, yes, from Meretz, but she voted for the Joint List the last time, but anyway, she was
and Samah, you wrote an article criticizing especially Meretz and having
because
I would like to elaborate on that.
Yeah, we will send the link to everybody. But yeah, it was a gimmick. It was like a trick that all the liberal Zionist movements or parties wanted to recruit Arab women, because it's like the diversity, multicultural. We check like more than box. Like we have Palestinian Czech, we have a woman Czech.
I'll give you. Let her finish. I would like to hear your input in this, because
we had an Arab.
Galia, I heard you for almost 10 minutes, so I really have a lot to say about your interpretation. Please let me finish.
And have a different aspect I would like you to address. Go ahead.
Of course, but the good news is that Ghaida Rinawi is in, my Ibtissam Rani is in with the pure Jewish voters, which is okay. You know, we don't need they didn't manage to bring Arab voters to the Zionist movement, but it's they are there and they are a good power. But inside the Arab society, we lost three feminist women, and which is a great loss for the movement. But the good news, and we have to bring something to the table. So this is the first time. I'm 45 years old, and for the last 25 years, I voted for the Knesset. This is the first time we are talking about feminist issue, about the LGBTQ community, about this the status of the Sharia court, the religious court, the relationship between the religion and governance. This is a huge issue for the feminists, the personal status, the citizenship marriage. Lots of small things that the feminist movement inside Israel fought for many years, and it's now on the table. And this is what's happened to Aida Touma, because she was the most radical feminist voice in the join list. She was left behind by the Arab men and the Jewish, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she was left in the field facing all the extremist homophobic campaigns that the right-wing movement planned and will manage against her in the social media, and it's worked. We are not ready for this argument, but as a feminist, because we can't go back to the closet, we have lots of essential important issues, feminist issue on the table, and they can put us now like under the table, so we under the ground, so we it's there. They used actually the feminist agenda to attack, the party, the Aram party, the Islamic movement slogan was that we are conservative. They are very proud of the conservative, and we want to keep, the religious as a very important value in our society. And we argue about that. So finally, we know that we have right and left. We have liberal and conservative. We have religious and more secular, open-minded people, and we have to decide. So yes, the join list is not the same with the same political power, but now we know that we have four mandates for Ra'am with the Islamic movement. By the way, it's not pure Islamic, because they have all kind of combination with previous mayors and other community leaders. And we have, yes, but the agenda is very conservative. I know that. But we know that Mazen Ghanaim, for example, he was previous member of Balad, the most radical, national party. So this jungling and, running between the parties, not really that he want to be in the Knesset with no matter under what umbrella. But yes, Mansour Abbas, we cannot argue with that, managed to put himself as main player in the field. For now, you will see my article tomorrow in Haaretz, but he planned, because the Arab audience heard something from Mansour Abbas, and the Israelis heard another argument, another speeches which more tolerant, were accepting, but in Arabic he decided to invade and occupy the Israeli society with his conservative religious agenda, claiming that he represents you and me and everyone. But I did this research, going to the numbers, like less than 9% of the Arab population voted for Ra'am. Mm-hmm. less than 10%. So they do not represent the liberal agenda. Good. The liberal agenda couldn't manage to get more mandates, but it's still he 50%, more than 50% of the people. People did vote, so behind part of that it for Jewish parties and the majority for the joint list, and 167.
Samah, I think we have that
thousand voters voted Samah? To representing the Arab Palestinian agenda.
Samah, can you hear me?
I do hear you now. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes,
we do. Yeah. So. We had the just problem with the, you know, connection with you, but I would like, thank you so much for this, full answer for what's going on and the related.
I will try meanwhile to get back to the, you know, regular connection. I lost it for a minute, so I will be
better okay.
The connection in 1 minute.
Yeah, Galia, regarding the representation of Arab women, especially in merits. I know Samah had this article and her thoughts regarding this issue, but I would like also to hear your input regarding this, since like also Tissam Marani and Ghaida Arinawi, they were not long-term active at all in merits or in Avodah, in Labour Party. So what are your thoughts in this? That they took someone to compete with feminists, as Samah said. No, I'm asking this question. Do you think that they took them to compete with the Arab woman feminist in the Arab parties and to gain votes from the woman and the Arab woman?
Please. No, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I can't speak for the Labour Party today, although I like what Merav Mikhaeli has been doing. We had in Meretz the very first Palestinian Israeli woman member of Knesset, and this was years ago. I mean, I barely remember it.
89.
Okay. Oh, okay. You remember the year?
98.
Okay. But I mean, not only that. The other thing is that there's been a movement in Meretz, and I've been part of it for quite some time, as I'm sure you both know, to try to make Meretz into a genuinely Jewish and Arab party. And it wasn't for electoral reasons. It was after the elections, the whole period basically since the last elections and even before. And a lot of us who were active in this group have nothing to do with electoral politics. I mean, we're not running for office and we wouldn't gain from it. We really wanted to have a joint party. So it's always been the case that Meretz has had Arab members of Knesset, Arab people, men or women, and good high places on their list. And it's only, I mean, I know it can be cynically interpreted as we want the Arab vote, but that's not the reason. The reason is that it's very much a part of the ideology of the party, whether one likes it or supports it or not, the same way that feminism, gay rights, these are the flags of Meretz. That's one of the reasons.
Galia, didn't you think that it's not really genuine that, you know, the Meretz want to, you know, locate itself as join a shared society, Arab Jewish party?
I only recently left the executive of Meretz. I was very much involved in all of these efforts and meetings. We had lots and lots of meetings of all kinds of groups to try to set up a joint party. I can tell you there was nothing cynical in it. The people involved, both the Palestinians and the Jewish Israelis, these were not cynical people.
They are not, but they are not powerful in Meretz. Their agenda is not like with Yair Golan.
No. That's, by the way, one of the reasons I left the executive was Yair Golan, and whom I don't consider to be part of this. But these people were all the leadership of Meretz, all the old leadership, Mosi Raz and Zahava Gal'on and Tami Zandberg. These were not just weak people. So I really would defend that whole effort, because I was a part of it and I know it intimately. And we were not the only people. There are other groups who identify with merits, but there are a lot of little groups meeting. And by the way, I think that we will continue to meet because this is not something we're going to just drop. But actually, you raised another point, Samach, that I'm really very glad you raised, because it was what I intended to say as an opening. I've been working on the numbers all day, comparing the number of women and the number of women from each party in past elections and so on. But I want to say one thing. I mean, numbers are important. The more women we have, the more Jewish women, the more Palestinian women, the more women, it's very good for educational purposes. So, you know, people get used to seeing women in politics, women in the Knesset, women in leadership. However, I did some research where I compared various Knessets, when there were very few women, when there were a lot of women, because since I think about 2003, we've really had a lot more women in there. 18 women, I think we even got up to something 37 with people coming in, replacing others and so on. I mean, but the truth is, and most of the years it was 8 and it was 11, it was really very small numbers. However, I came to the conclusion, and it's research-based, did this research with my assistant at the university, and we found that the key is not numbers, the key is feminism, which is what you raised. Mm-hmm. The key is feminist women. It didn't matter when we had 30, you even mentioned 37 women in the Knesset, but they weren't all feminists. And I found, for example, if I look back at 1992 at the Knesset, when there were 11 women, there were nothing, but they were feminists. Mm-hmm. But more than that, the men from Hadash, the communists, and the men from Meretz were feminists. And I looked at all of their proposed legislation and everything, and I came to the conclusion that it's good if there are more women, say, from the center, because they may be feminists. That would be good. But we've got, the truth is, and by the way, this research abroad finds the same thing. Men and women who are feminists, it's ideology more than gender is what counts. And so while I want more women in for the reasons I said, the real advantage is feminist women, whether Palestinian, Israeli, whether they're from labor, from merits. Now, labor and merits have an advantage because they have labor under Merav.
Yeah, but Galia, don't you think that like men, especially Arab politicians, says for us for many years, we represent you, we care for you.
I know. And I agree that, with you, by the way.
Ladies, I want to ask the question. One second, please, because we already at 8:07. So the webinar will be done at 8:30. And I see that there are some questions from the audience. And this is the moment to remind the audience, if you have any questions, please submit it in the Q&A questions. So I'll let you finish your sentence, Galia, but we need to move on with
the questions. No, I was just going to say it's very true, and Samach mentioned this, that your conservatives, the Islamists, cooperate with our ultra-Orthodox. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. That's all. That's all I wanted to say. You're quite right. They all speak in our name, but they're not but the only the joint list, which is decidedly to the left, and Meretz, and now Labor under Merav Mikhaeli, are the only parties that really do have feminists in them and feminists who are active. They can be men. They can be men, and I think that's important to remember.
So you're saying that feminism is
I do agree. You know, we all really miss Shulamit Aloni. You know, I don't need Palestinian women to have Shulamit Aloni. You know,
Dov Hanin,
Merav Mikhaeli, yes, but still, you agree with me that with 24 women in the current Knesset, it's like 19%, and
I agree 100%. Of course, I'd like to see 100 women.
Yeah,
out of 120. So, I mean, obviously,
What can be done? I'm sorry. What can be done to make sure that women in both sides, Palestinian women, Israeli citizen of Israel, and also women from the Jewish community, especially, I would like you, Samah, I would like you to focus on the Palestinian woman as an activist and as a feminist in the our community, how we can help to make sure that women are not putting into lower seats, you know, especially for the Knesset, but not only for the Knesset. In 2023, there's going to be a local council elections, and we should have more.
Yeah, women. I have the numbers as well, of
course. Exactly. And Galia, related to this question, I would like you to focus in other women with marginalized communities, different ethnic groups like the Mizrahi, the Ethiopian, and the Haredi maybe. So, after this question, after your answer, I would like to have some of the questions that the audience submitted, and because we only have 20 minutes, so please.
If I can, very quickly. Okay.
Yeah, I will make it brief. You know, for the Arab society, it's like the Knesset is for me. Okay, I'm saying as a feminist, as an activist, as peace activist as well. For me, the Knesset is one of the fields that we are fighting for. The most of the, you know, economics and plans and the hard decision or the big decision that make like ongoing our life, controlling our life, is made in the municipal councils. In Israel, there is around 900 municipal council members, and we have only 27 women, Arab women. Like it's much less than 4 or 5 Arab women in the Knesset. So this is the grassroots movement that have to be empowered, and the feminist agenda, the feminist organization, relying on the nonprofit organization, the feminist organization with this, with very, very short funding issues, you know, all the problems what's happening in the feminist organization as well. It's a really hard job too. So we have a target to bring women inside the communities, inside the neighborhoods, the small villages, to run, to be part of the local politics, and then to go after, to grow up. Okay.
Take a lead.
Israel is not courage enough to adapt the quota regulations that the Palestinian Authority do have. They have this 30% of any party, and today the political parties submitted their list in the Ramallah and the Palestinian Authority, preparing to the upcoming election, and they have by the law to bring 30 women in their list. In Tunisia, for example, they were much more, you know, progressive, enforcing any political party to have 50% of the candidate as a woman, and not in the, you know, the bottom of the list. They have to have man and woman, which will supposed to bring, you know, equality to the parliament. So it was very hard to pass that law. And Tunisia did that after the revolution. So Israel is in a very, very hard place in that matter. And regarding the Arab parties, we are facing dinosaurs in that term. We know who's the next female in Hadash. We know who will be the next female in Balad, the candidate. It's closed doors, behind the closed doors, and there is no room for young generation of activists, and male and female, by the way. So it's really, we have to, you know, open the doors, and you know, that's why Ibtissam Marani and Ghaida goes and knocked the door to the neighbors, you know, because the Arab joint list did not open its options. So we have to do homework, we have to do grassroots movements, we have to be empowering women in the local politics and to go from there.
Lesson
and
them.
We have
Lesson
long, them. Long a journey to do, and
yeah.
We are feminists, so never give up.
Thank you.
No, it's it's all the same. It's we have to do exactly the same thing. It's grassroots. We worked very, very hard to get minimum requirements in all the parties, what we call quotas, but it's not quotas limiting, it's a minimum. And most of the parties, even the Likud, adopted minimums, except that they don't fulfill them. Aside from merits, which has had the 40% of each gender ever since the beginning, Labor under Merav Mikhaeli also had the 50-50, what we call the zipper, you know, one male, female. Most of the parties just don't abide by that. Some of the parties don't even have primaries. So that's absolutely true. And that's something we fought for, because I personally think, having studied it, it's one of the areas that I studied, that it's absolutely necessary, until society changes, we do have to have some regulations, such as the Palestinians, and Samah, of course, is right, that brought in this 30% rule. A lot of countries have done that. We have not done that in Israel, so we try to do it in each of the parties. But then they have to do it. They have to actually abide by it, and Meretz does, which is why there are Palestinians, young people, and women. These are the three categories that we make sure that in the top 10 are represented as they should be. But if we could see all the parties doing it, that would be fine. But there's no question about it. Samach is correct. This is grassroots work. We try to encourage people, women, young people, Palestinian Israelis, Ethiopian Israelis, people to run in local elections, people to come into the parties and run in the parties, try to gain positions within the parties. It's a long road, but if I look back, you know, we started the Israeli Women's Network in 1984, and this was one of the two main issues we tackled. One of them was the religious issue, civil marriage and so on. Yes. And one of them was women in politics. Mm-hmm. I think we've come a long way. There are many more women in politics today. There are more women in the Knesset, but we still have a long way to go because we haven't changed society.
Thank you, Galia. I just want to now take some questions from the audience. I would like to ask the question, since it's 8:16, and I would like each one to have question and answer it, please. So first question is from Rick Robbins, from Israeli Jewish and also Israeli Arab Palestinian and also feminist perspectives, would there be any significant overall differences in how the right or the center / left would govern, how they would affect things in the long and short terms?
First of all, this term center-left has been thrown around. I don't know what center-left, there is no such thing. I considered Labor to be center-left and Meretz to be left and the joint list to be left. I don't see a center-left. Lapid is not center-left. Blue and white is not center-left. They're both center-right, if you want. Mm-hmm. But what could they do? Well, there are a lot of things you can do. We have legislation, for example, about sexual harassment, violence against women. Much, much more can be done in both of those areas. Those are two very specific areas. Much more can be done in terms of protecting women's rights. We have the pandemic right now. Who are the people suffering the most in the pandemic? Well, obviously women. And are they going to be, and going back to jobs? It's already been discussed that women are going to be the last ones to be brought back to their jobs. Mm-hmm. There are so many issues that a genuinely left-wing, and I mean that when I say it, a genuinely left-wing government, if Meretz, Labor, and the joint list were to set up a coalition, I think that would be great. There's so much that they can do. It isn't as if everything, let's try civil marriage, civil marriage and divorce. That's a, you know, very simple thing. Not so simple, obviously, for either community. There's a whole list of things. By the way, there are also some very good laws on the books. And we've had a retreat. I mean, in the early 1950s, there were a lot of very good laws put on the books for equal rights for men and women. And a lot of that has fallen back, things like maternity leave. And we, of course, we now have paternity leave for the men as well, but they don't take it, but we've got it. But a lot of the maternity leave has been, while women get their maternity leave, against the law, they're not taken back to their jobs when they finish maternity leave. So there are many, many things that are yet to be done.
Thank you, Galia. Samah, this is questions that mostly related to the Palestinian territories, actually. This is from Lawrence. The question is, what effect will the results of the Israeli election have on the mooted Palestinian elections? Will those elections happen? And what chances for the new Palestinian leadership, for a new Palestinian leadership in occupied territory? So briefly, Samah, please.
Or well, I'm not voting in Ramallah. I vote in Nazareth and Lod, but I follow what's happened, and today I knew what's happened because today was the deadline. But I doubt it, that they will have some change. There is lots of tension. Some people say that they might cancel the election under the what's happened in Jerusalem and in Gaza. This very complicated process with three stages, but the woman is doing well in terms because of the law, because they want to push forward and they have by the law to have a female candidate. I think that the denial situation here in Israel that is happening with what's happening in the Palestinian territories is must be ended, and they are following what's happening inside. Israel are waiting for the relief, actually waiting for any kind of government to start again the peace process and go back to the negotiation. Now we have kind of chance under the Biden regime. He just released the U.S. aid policy. So some kind of like refreshing breeze we come here in the situation here. But still, the feminist movement is weak. They have also the Islamic extremists who are fighting the CEDAW. Everything related to the civil marriage, everything related to the gender-based violence, they are fighting back. And it's the same thing, the same right-wing voices that always attack the gender and feminist agenda. Still, the Palestinian Authority have more women in the government. They have more progressive laws. But they don't have election. This is my joke. Like, they have the quota, but they don't have election. We don't have the quota, and we have too many times election. So
thank you, thank you, Samah. So quick questions and the quick answer for this: is the sitting prime minister not allowed to be tried in Israel? Yes
or no? A sitting prime minister can be tried, and he is. As a matter of fact, he goes on trial again. Mm-hmm. I mean, his trial resumes. Just as the government is supposed to be forming.
Unless we will have another election.
Yeah, but as you know,
trying to change the law,
He's trying very hard. The reason he made this alliance with the extreme right is that they promised that they will go along with trying to change the law so that a sitting prime minister who's a person who's under indictment cannot be prime minister or cannot be re-elected as prime minister. Look, he could get that law through. A lot depends on the coalition that he makes. He's trying to stay out of jail.
Absolutely. I'll take two more questions and then we'll have the closing. So the other question is, can anyone compare the left and the right pre-1948 and up to the 1976 as far as the Palestinians are concerned?
No. Look, pre 48, the political system was dominated by Mapai, Labor. The Liberals, by the way, the Liberal Party was fairly strong. That's how the women got the vote way back when. The Liberals were pretty strong. That's how the women got the vote. But no, there's no way that we could say that the system was better in those days. I mean, don't forget that from 1948 until 1966, there was martial law basically for the Arab community in Israel. They couldn't go out at night, they had curfews, they couldn't move about. I mean, you could hardly say that it was a good system. So from that point of view, there's been some progress, but there is quite a bit of difference between pre-48 and the Yishuv. The Yishuv was what was running the show was the Jewish issue, the Jewish entity, and what was running that was Mapai. Nothing else really, aside a little bit for the liberals, nothing else was really very important. I mean, we could go on and much longer, but yeah, that's the short answer.
To address, like, to give you something, you know, about the feminist movement before 48, like the first feminist movement was initiated in 1902, and the most, you know, biggest delegation for feminist conference in Cairo was in 37, it was the Palestinian delegation. So the feminist movement also was, you know, have a very, very hard time in 48. And we were freezed actually as a feminist movement for 30 years. And then we tried to recover. So that's why the feminist movement inside, among the Palestinians inside Israel, is much more regressive than Tunis and the women, the Palestinian women, Lebanon women, and Syrians. So
I want to mention, by the way, the national conflict wars do not good to the feminists, because
I would like to give more time. I know that it's 8:28, and okay. I'm sorry that I'm looking at the time, but there's more questions and I cannot have it all. But quick two questions that I would like to ask you from the audience. Do you anticipate the new government will address the rise of in a domestic violence in Israel among both Jewish and Palestinian society? I would like more to be specific, and please, forgive me, to address the violence or the internal violence in the Arab society.
Wanted to say that if Abbas, who's the Islamist, the head of the Islamist movement, if in fact he gets his way, one of his demands, and this is a right wing, that is a conservative Arab party, is to address violence in the Arab community. And the reason that request is addressed to the Israeli government is that it's very much a question, as I understand it, of having greater policing in these communities. And policing means also gun control. It's not just that it's happening.
I have to address gender-based violence. So in 2017, we have this big demonstration. It was the first massive demonstration that Arab and Jewish feminists inside Israel arranged, a women's strike. Galia, and we managed to convince the right-wing government, actually, when Bibi visited the shelter, and it was a really scandalous thing, but to pass this 5-year plan for fighting gender-based violence for 5 million shekel or something like that, for Arab and Jewish programs. And we know now, after 3 years, that we have less than 25% from the budgets, the multiple, election, this country is running without a budget, official budget, and we did never get the money. So we are now fighting to have what they promised us. And it's really, I do believe that we have a shared struggle, and we have to continue that, to follow up what's happened to that law with that massive, big, decision in the government. Netanyahu is like, everybody was positive around it. Bottom line, we didn't get the money, and we have another struggle to run together.
So Ayala is on board now. That means that I would like 30 seconds from each one of you to give her final statement. 30 seconds, please.
30 seconds, all I want to say is that I think that Mirav Michaeli changed the language of the elections, and the fact that she takes this very strong, very open feminist position is positive for everybody, because the women and the men who don't want to be overshadowed by her will have to stand up and listen and maybe join her in this. So I think that on balance, I think the most significant thing about this election is not the numbers, But it's Merav Michaeli. Not only that you had a woman running a party, we've had that many times, but she was such an outspoken feminist, using the male and feminine and so forth in her language. She has made a very big difference. And I think we're going to feel it, not just as in terms of the Labour Party, but I think that a lot of people, especially the women are going to, in the Knesset from all the parties, are going to find it very hard to sort of ignore that whole element that she has brought into the picture. That's my 30 seconds.
Thank you, Galia.
I think that gender-based violence and gender agenda or feminist agenda is the key word here. I don't think this is the numbers. Merav Michaeli is still like she has only 7 mandates in the parliament. But I do think that because we have probably will have in 1 year another election, I think that we have to push the feminist agenda for all the parties. And to be there as a mentor, as like to know what's happening regarding everything. I think that one of the main job of the feminist movement and Arab and Jewish nonprofits to track the next agenda of the upcoming government, no matter who's doing this, and to analyze the budget and the guidelines about the next government from gender alliances and to stay there. And this is what we are good to do. And I think that we have huge challenge with what's happening now in the political arena.
Thank you, Samah. Thank you, Galia. I think that there's a lot of topics that we didn't, address in this webinar, but it was a great discussion. Ayala, the floor is yours now. You're muted.
I have to unmute.
Yeah.
They told me that the most feminist term that we have this year, unmute yourself. So
yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Galia. Thank you, Samah. Thank you, Suha, for a most lively, honest, and most feminist discussion. Thank you also to the National Council of Jewish Women. And thank you to the staff of Partners for Progressive Israel, Dinesh, Ron, and Julie, for all that you did in making this wonderful, exciting discussion happen. And thank you all for joining us for this Women's Initiative webinar to be continued. Partner is glad to bring this program to all of you. If you want to learn more about our upcoming programming, please visit our website at progressiveisrael.org. And while you're there, make a contribution. That is what enables us to bring programs like this one to all of you at no cost. And thank you all again. Stay safe, and most importantly, stay committed to a feminist agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the platform. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye.